He was a person who wanted to excel. No sooner had he reached the pinnacle in one career than he was off doing something else.
He's a real pathbreaker, pathfinder. He made it possible for many who came after him.
He was willing to fight for justice and human rights, not only in America, but throughout the world.
He's an outstanding speaker, an outstanding politician, just a great man.
He was daring, he was bold, he was not afraid to speak up for that which he thought was wrong, for injustices and for inequities.
Bless the Lord, I got my seal today and today, to slake alive in the field today and today, but God always the righteous way.
George Washington Williams was born October 16, 1849, in Bedford Springs, Pennsylvania, the second child born to Thomas Williams, a freed slave, and Ellen Roos.
He lived in the 50s at a time when the nation was segregated, whether we were talking about the North or the South. He most likely lived in a segregated community. He did not go to elementary school.
George Washington Williams really wanted to fight for the country, really wanted to be a part of the freedom of the United States. And so he enlisted in the United States Colored Troops at the age of 14.
At the beginning of the Civil War, African Americans were not permitted to enlist. When African Americans were given the right to bear arms, young George Washington Williams went to fight. George spent most of his formative years in battle. As an adult, he wrote about his experience in his book, The Negro Troops in the War of the Rebellion.
I narrowly escaped death once. A rebel took deliberate aim at me with both barrels of his gun, and the bullets passed so close to me that the powder that remained on them burnt my cheek.
Following his service in the Civil War, he re-enlisted using his given name and was shot in the lung while in the military. George Washington Williams survived his wound and was honorably discharged. Williams heard about a school that educated African-American men. Barely literate, he attempted to enroll in Howard University.
Sir, Mr. Howard, I have the honor to inform and introduce myself with you and to let you know my heart's desire. And in a brief discourse, I will make myself known to you as one wanting to be useful to my fellow men.
He began just barely literate, and was not accepted at Howard, went on and enrolled at Andover Newton Theological Institution in Boston and graduated as one of the commencement speakers, so he was a quick study.
For nearly three centuries, Africa has been robbed of her sable sons. For nearly three centuries, they've toiled in bondage, unrequited in its youthful Republic of the West.
Not long after his graduation and his marriage to his wife, Sarah Starrett, he was called by the 12th Baptist Church in Boston to be the head pastor where he wrote the history of the church.
I have striven to narrate the history of a humble, though pious people. It distresses me to call it a history. I wish I knew what to call it.
Barely 24 years old, Reverend Williams was in charge of a congregation of more than 700 people that included some of the most prominent African-American men of Boston.
I feel deeply the importance of my position, the dignity of my calling, and my weakness and imperfection. But one thought comforts and urges me into this vast field, and that is, lo, I am with you always, even until the end of the world.
The young Reverend Williams filled his role well as head pastor, but he was concerned with stopping the deplorable conditions in the South. Senseless lynchings, brutal murders, and the hapless terrorizing of Southern African Americans still plague the nation.
He was very concerned living during the Reconstruction period. He was very concerned with what was happening in the South. In fact, he traveled to Louisiana, Mississippi, and other areas investigating the conditions in the South.
After resigning from the pulpit at the 12th Baptist Church on October 1st, 1875, he went to Washington, D.C. to start a national paper called The Commoner.
He thought the newspaper could be a vehicle for pointing out the atrocities that were occurring against blacks both in the North and the South. He also saw it as an educational tool.
The time has come when the Negro must do something. The Negro will begin to make history. What manner of history will it be? That is the question. To this end, I will go to Washington and edit a journal. It will be their teacher, their friend, their mirror.
Now, the newspaper didn't live up to his hopes, and it was not as successful in terms of getting this national constituency. But it lasted for about a year and certainly had the endorsement of people like Frederick Douglass and other distinguished people during this period.
Williams was unable to raise the funds to continue The Commoner. He still needed to provide for his family. He took a job as a postal worker in a Washington post office, where he worked until he received an invitation to become the pastor of Union Baptist Church in Cincinnati, Ohio.
George Washington Williams came to Union Baptist, the congregation had sort of gone to other places, the membership had dropped. He tried to find ways to rebuild the membership. In the 1870s, I think there were 8 African-American congregations here. One of the things that George Washington Williams wanted to do was to consolidate all those congregations. You know, that didn't work too well, but I think a couple of them got consolidated. So he started having a Wednesday evening prayer meeting, which led eventually to a revival. He had rebuilt the membership to the level it was before he came. That was a great accomplishment.
Reverend Williams was gaining immense popularity in this Midwestern city. He championed civic groups and began writing for the Cincinnati Commercial under the pen name Aristides. Williams' talent as a writer and orator naturally drew him closer to becoming involved in government.
He was supportive of the Republicans, and I believe that he saw politics as a way, a vehicle for increasing the power and influence of African Americans. There had not been a black elected to the legislature, and the first time he ran, I believe in 1877, he lost. He was elected in 1879, and I think that that was a groundbreaking step in terms of opening the doors to other blacks.
Cincinnati at that time was very politically conservative. It was heavily dominated by the Republican Party. And African Americans at that time did not have any influence whatsoever from a substantial standpoint in the politics of Cincinnati. At that particular time also, we must understand Cincinnati was very heavily segregated. And there was great poverty among the African Americans who lived in Cincinnati at that time.
Williams had an incredible gift for public speaking, which allowed him to meet people of high political influence. In turn, that gave him leverage to be able to fight for the rights of African Americans.
He was a visionary. And I admire the fact that he was willing to fight for justice and human rights, not only in America, but throughout the world.
Williams was interested somewhat, and I don't say this in a self-serving way, but he was interested in promoting who he was as a person and who he wanted to be. He was also interested in dedicating his life to fighting racism and discrimination that existed in this country.
On August 20th, 1877, the Hamilton County Republican Convention met and nominated George Washington Williams as a candidate for the legislature.
I rise simply to tender my sincere thanks for the honor you have conferred upon me in nominating me as one of your representatives in the legislature of Ohio. I heartily thank you for myself, for the colored people, and for the Republican Party.
Despite his hopes, and with little support from the Republican Party, George Washington Williams lost the election.
Well, I think we have to remember that George Washington Williams basically lived in an area that was heavily white. And I think the white voters were not quite sure that they wanted to elect an African-American to the state legislature?
It was difficult. You know, he first ran in 1877. Just very difficult to win countywide, number one. He was able to pick up a lot more support, and I believe support from his party, in the second race. But that first race was just a very challenging thing. I think it was the novelty of having an African-American running for office. They called him all kinds of names, everything but George Washington Williams. You know, it was the colored one, the tainted one, the off color is what they used. The newspapers in Cincinnati always called him the off color Solon from Hamilton County, as opposed to calling him by his name. And so, you know, you had a lot of discrimination that was taking place.
When Williams ran for the legislature, he encountered several attorneys whom he admired. One attorney who helped him a great deal was a Cincinnati lawyer, Alfonso Taft.
My great-great-grandfather, Alfonso Taft, was an attorney, in fact, the first member of the Taft family to move to Cincinnati. He had a law office in Cincinnati, and he invited George Washington Williams in to study law with him.
Williams said that Taft was
the only white man in the cabinet of any president during the last 18 years who had the manhood, the temerity, and the humanity to exact the powers of the Constitution to protect the black man in the exercise of human rights.
I think he thought it was important to reach out to a promising, up-and-coming African-American leader. I think he was very concerned about making real the rights, making tangible the freedom that African-Americans had really won as a result of the Civil War.
It was Alfonso Taft's influence that helped George Washington Williams attend classes at Cincinnati's School of Law. Newspapers remarked on his skills as an orator, which fueled his aspirations to be a public figure and earn a seat in the legislature. Undaunted by the 1877 election, 2 years later he ran again at age 30. He won by 2,000 votes. He celebrated with his colleagues.
The eyes of the people of the other states of the Union are turned to Ohio. Let me say to you that as a representative of this county, in the councils of this state, I shall do nothing nor say nothing that shall ever cause any man who casts his vote for me to hang his head in shame.
Well, that was a miracle for him to get elected in Cincinnati. You got to remember that even throughout the country, blacks were not being elected. There were one or two state legislators in a couple of other states, but they weren't being elected. Remember, this is the post-Reconstruction period, and we know what happened in the post-Reconstruction period. All of the gains, political gains, and all of those things that happened where blacks were elected during the Reconstruction period had all been eliminated.
George Washington Williams was officially sworn in on January 5th, 1880. On his second day in the legislature, he presented a bill proving to his constituents that he was not going to be lax with his job.
George Washington Williams served with distinction. He was the first African-American in leadership. He was elected Secretary of the Republican Caucus. So he introduced bills that dealt with interracial marriage, which was very controversial at the time. He introduced legislation on dealing with police misconduct and brutality. He was the chair of the Library Committee, the State Library Committee. And so he pushed through legislation that would improve the library in the state, increase the number of volumes of books that they had, and also dealt with legislation around books in the public school system and purchasing them at the lowest possible cost. He was a very, very busy legislator in his first session and only session of the General Assembly.
Well, I think George Washington Williams went to Columbus with an agenda. From the moment he was elected, he knew exactly what he was to do and what he wanted to get done. It wasn't an easy job for him within the Republican Party because he had to battle within the Republican Party to get to the point where he was.
However successful George Washington Williams was in the legislature, this didn't keep discrimination from occurring.
I suspect that in the early 1880s that there were few places of public accommodations that would serve mixed groups, African Americans and whites. Generally, these places excluded blacks. The Beck restaurant was owned by a man named Lawrence Beck, who did not serve coloreds, as they were called at that time. But it was a place where members of the legislature frequently visited. And I suppose that George Washington Williams felt like he should have an opportunity to associate with his colleagues. So he went to the restaurant and was not served, was turned down. He was incensed at his treatment, especially since he was a member of the legislature. He complained to his colleagues, and several of them recommended that he sue the restaurant under the 1875 Civil Rights Act that prohibited discrimination in places of public accommodations. The legislature actually established a committee which censored the restaurant owner. And I believe the owner eventually apologized but did not integrate his establishment. So he achieved some things there.
The public reprimand of a white man for not serving a person of color became a small victory for African Americans throughout the state.
Williams did not go back to that restaurant because he was unwilling to be an exception. If the restaurant was not open to everyone, then he was not willing to be served just because he was a member of the legislature.
Becoming a public figure can invite controversy. Williams, like most public figures, endured constant scrutiny and was faced with proving his integrity to his constituents. A bill he supported, which closed one of only two African-American cemeteries in the city, proved to be costly to his political career.
There was one particular bill to allow for residents of the Avondale area to complain to the health department if they found that a cemetery within a half a mile of their residency was a nuisance. Now, that particular bill passed the House and upset many of his constituencies in the city. They felt like it was a ban against African Americans being buried in a, I think it was a Methodist cemetery. And they felt like it was being used as a way to promote residential housing for upper-class whites in the community. So of all things that he initiated, I think that was the one thing that sort of ended his political career.
In 1881, after finishing one term in the legislature, he did not run again. Instead, he devoted his life to researching a past that was left out of American history.
Williams was not a trained historian, but he was very much interested in African-American history. When he looked at what had been written, and in fact what had not been written about African-Americans, he was appalled. He had written the first major study on African-American history at a time when blacks were being completely ignored by white historians. So he's the father of African-American history.
George Washington Williams was proud of his service to his country, along with all African-Americans who fought in the Civil War. It was time for the rest of the world to recognize their accomplishments.
He had a great appreciation for the military and really worked very hard to record the history of African Americans throughout the country.
His real interest, I believe, was African Americans involved in the Civil War. And we know that he later published a book on Negro troops during the Civil War, which were substantial works for that time. I believe that they were well received. They had mixed reviews, but because there was so little out there, people purchased the books. In fact, well past his death, his books were still selling.
Somebody's knocking at your
At only 39 years old, at what appeared to be the height of his career, George Washington Williams' health was failing. The complications from his earlier gunshot wound were wearing on him. Despite this, he arranged a trip to Africa with the aid of a wealthy benefactor.
George Washington Williams used a great deal of ingenuity and relationships that he had established with leading figures in American history, really, at the time, and had corresponded with and developed relationships with some of the most influential and wealthy Americans in the country. Collis Huntington was one of those, and Collis Huntington supported George Washington's trip to Africa because of his desire to look at running a railway, building a railway throughout the continent and certainly through the Belgian Congo.
While traveling through the Belgian Congo, he witnessed the deplorable treatment of the Africans under the rule of King Leopold II.
George Washington Williams initially had great admiration and respect for King Leopold II. Leopold was being recognized as essentially this great savior almost, a great philanthropist, a great humanitarian. He was viewed as all of these things. And then when George Washington Williams actually arrived in Africa and toured the continent, and specifically in the Belgian Congo, he found that this was not the case, that Africans were being tricked, that their land was being taken from them, that they were being enslaved, that they were being brutalized. And so he felt the need to write this letter to King Leopold II.
In his open letter to King Leopold II, George Washington Williams wrote,
"I appeal to the Belgian people and to their constitutional government, so proud of its traditions, replete with the song and story of its champions of human liberty, and so jealous of its present position in the sisterhood of European states, to cleanse itself of the imputation of crimes with which Your Majesty's personal state of Congo is polluted."
Well, it was unbelievably bold for an individual who did not really have rank. I mean, he didn't really have standing with the United States government. So he was sort of a free will ambassador going to the continent of Africa and being bold and daring enough to criticize one of the most powerful men in the world. So naturally, there were repercussions. There were consequences from his critique.
It seems to me that George Washington Williams had a kind feeling toward people. And he was incensed because people were treated in the manner in which they were treated. And that began his great crusade for human rights and justice.
He was a man who sort of understood the big picture. He understood the association between what was happening in the Congo and the discrimination, racism that existed in this country, and did not try to separate them.
His open letter was not taken favorably. George Washington Williams sustained criticism in newspapers across the world. Amid the controversy, he lost the financial support of his benefactor. Without resources, his health worsened. He settled in Blackpool, England. Soon after, he lost the use of one of his lungs, and his doctor gave him only 2 months to live.
It's interesting to even talk about the latter part of George Washington Williams' life because he died so young. I mean, he just really blazed through life doing so many things, from soldier to clergyman to lawyer to legislator to historian to international diplomat. All and then died at the age of 41. And so he died destitute.
George Washington Williams was a man with faith, courage, and wisdom beyond his years. He excelled in each task he undertook. leaving a legacy that's invaluable to us as Americans and as people.
He was viewed as a great military leader, in fact, recruited for that position and quickly assumed the top leadership position, commanding troops of large numbers.
He wanted more. He wanted to show that he could achieve in spite of racism, in spite of discrimination. Seems to me that he's a wonderful role model for our youth.
He broke barriers all over the place. He fought for the North in the Civil War. He was the pastor of a church in my hometown of Cincinnati. He also started and ran a newspaper, so he was a very accomplished journalist.
George Weston Williams was a great model for young people to emulate because he was such an adroit politician, such a great pastor, and loved his congregation so, loved his people so.
I think that it would be an inspiration for those of us who are in politics today to read his life story and to get an example of a man who believed as strongly as he did, fought for what he believed in, and made progress in the world.